malungu abekekileyo endlu yasepalamente yaseMzantsi Afrika, ohloniphekileyo umphathiswa umama uDelille, ohloniphekileyo usekela mphathiswa umama uKivitz, uDG umphathi wabo bonke abasebenzi bethu nesigqeba sakhe netimu yakhe, itimu esisapotayo esuka epalamente, ndiyanibulisa nonke ngolu suku sisisizwe saseAfrika siselebreyitha sivuyela olu suku lwaseAfrika. Suku olo olurecognizwayo by many countries in Africa as a public holiday because it is the day in May 25th, 1963, in which the Organization of African Union was founded. And as such, as Africans, because we are Africans, we also celebrate that day. It may not be a public holiday in our country, South Africa, but we celebrate that day. We know that we are Africans.
Recording in progress.
I welcome you all in this meeting that we're going to deal with the legislative processes. In fact, what we're looking at particularly as this committee, because it's something that we found in the legacy report, the issue of the Public Works Bill. So then we also check whether are there any legislations that have to be processed coming from the entities, but our main focus is to ensure that at the end of this term, that the Public Works Bill sees the light of its day. It can be white papers, another white paper. I think those that were here, I'm not sure whether it's 2020 or 2021, when we rejected, when a team was bringing to us a third white paper. We said, no, we can't have a third white paper. Already there are two white papers on the Public Works Bill. It can be. There must be a progress on this because we know that it will assist this department, especially in all the issues that it has on challenges of it being paid by client departments. If you have a Public Works Bill, that would assist you how to deal with those. So with those few words, honorable members, I welcome you in this meeting. Do we have any apologies, Ms. Martinez?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. We've got an apology of the Minister of Public Works, who was unable to join this meeting because of cabinet meeting that's running at the same time. I don't have any apologies from the honorable members, but from the support staff, Inez is still unwell. Ms. Tabi has also been booked off. I will also like to tell an apology, Chair. I'll be in and out of the meeting as I'm tasked with the work of the ad hoc joint committee on flood disaster relief and recovery. So the committee's work is going on an oversight to KZN, and the delegation is leaving tomorrow. So we're busy with those preparations. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Martinez. We wish Ms. Inez speedy recovery and Tabi also speedy recovery. I have received, I thought you also have received the email from Honorable Van Staden. I thought you also have received it, who is apologizing for this meeting. Can you then flight the agenda?
Or Chair?
Yes.
Chair, my apologies. Chair, I've raised my hand.
Yes, yes. Honorable Tring?
Chair, just a note, I unfortunately also have another portfolio committee meeting, so I may not be on for the full duration of this meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tring. Your apology is noted. Honorable members, we will deal with this, and then after we will deal with the minutes that we have. Over to you, DM. Is DM in the meeting in the absence of the minister?
Yes, Chairperson, a good morning to you and a happy Africa Day to yourself, the honorable members on the platform, our DG and his support, as well as the support of Parliament. Yes, Chair, I am on the platform with quite a number of officials as requested and as ordered by Parliament to come and brief you on the processes of our legislation with respect to the Public Works Bill and all other laws that the department is considering. Chair, you are correct on this very important day, Africa Day, a day we should all be embracing and celebrating, because it's a day that we remind ourselves of who we are, where we come from, and where we are going to. The work that you do as Parliament may be overlooked by others, but I think it's the kind of work that helps us as a nation to soldier on into the future, especially as this Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, understanding exactly the premise you move from, Honorable Chair, when you say there was to be a third third white paper, which I remember Minister screaming to say we can't have another white paper. We agree holistically with the sentiments of the portfolio committee in that respect. And I must say, Chair, we immediately, because yes, truly, this is a matter that came in the very first few meetings that we had with the portfolio committee. And it was an observation that we as the ministry also had made, that one cannot say this is the department. You get this piece of function there, that piece of function there, you get all these pieces fractured. And we realized we needed to bring the fractures together so that the whole body of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, one can go to one piece of legislation and be clear in terms of what is happening within the department. And therefore, in appreciating the opportunity given to us, I understand that also the presentation was sent a bit late. Probably I should first apologize for that, because it's that kind of work that is done internally and externally in the department. And we had some challenges with respect to the time for producing the presentation. We know and understand that that limits the ability of the committee to be thorough in looking into what we are doing. And hence our apologies for that inconvenience, Honorable Chairperson. But we are here now with the presentation having been circulated yesterday, albeit late. And we understand that legislation by its very nature, whether it derives in our case its existence from our constitution, because the laws that we're talking about here are more of administrative laws, and this country being a constitutional country, we need to be certain that we do not produce something that is going to be at the end not meet our constitutional objectives. That being said, Chair, I have Dr. Alec Muemi on the platform, supported by the responsible acting DDG, Mulatelo Muwasa from the branch. I think they are ready to take us through the report. Happy Africa Day to you all. Thank you. Over to you, or back to you, Chair.
Thank you, DM. Thank you so much. We really appreciate that. Over to you, DG, and your team.
Hati, good morning, Honorable Chairperson. And a good morning as well to the Honorable Members of the Committee, to our Deputy Minister, and to the colleagues in Parliament, as well as my colleagues in the Department. Chairperson, the DM has given the proper overview of where we come from in terms of this. And just to emphasize that we, as a department, also concur with the view of the committee and the ministry, and that equally we have in our prioritization with the leader of government business of the bills that must come through. Indeed, two bills, being the Public Works Bill as well as the Expropriation Bill, have been highlighted to be fast-tracked, as they have a huge economic impact in terms of what the state is trying to do in the economic recovery in this regard. So for that, we are keen on actually sharing what the emergence of the Public Works Bill is coming like. We have these other bills as well in tow in terms of our program. And those two, we would, time permitting and the committee's program allowing, wish to also bring them forth. And this will speak to the CIDB amendment bill. And there, as the chair is aware, our keen interest is really in polishing the system that we have tested and that we believe currently works. But we have seen significant gaps in terms of the mandate by which we require the construction industry to develop and to grow from there, and to broaden the scope of application of the registry, and to also ensure that we can accommodate more and grow the number of players within this industry. We also are looking at the IDT Act, which we're looking at the change really in the deed of trust, and we're looking at the reconfiguration process, and the details of which we'll share with you what the thinking is. You would recall that in this regard, there was an attempt really at saying that we should do away with the IDT, but Cabinet was of a different view that the IDT has got to be repurposed and be repositioned to be a niche player within the market for smaller programs and medium-sized programs, including the building of clinic schools and related type of property, and that they play in that space which the big players within government do not necessarily play in. Again, you would also be aware that in terms of the Agreement SA Act, we are looking at amendments as well to that, and to ensure that we bring a better structure and better functionality of this. I will, with your permission, Chair, and your indulgence, request that my colleague, the Acting DDG for Policy Research and Regulation Branch, Mr. Mulatelo Muhaswa, to then take us through the rest of the presentation in terms of the specific amendments we are proposing, and more importantly, also the specific provisions we seek the DPWI Legislative Act to provide for. With your permission, Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Acting DG. I'm not sure if I'm audible. Okay, thank you very much. Let me also greet the Honorable Chairperson, The honorable members of the portfolio committee, our deputy minister, our minister in absentia, and our acting DG, the senior management of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, and all colleagues that are present here. Thank you very much for the opportunity once again. And I think as you're talking about the cultural clothing, I was thinking of, you know, quickly going and grabbing something just before the meeting. Unfortunately, I couldn't do that with that speed. But indeed, we recognize this important day and the milestone in our country. Chairperson, without any much further ado, the DG has given an overall summary in terms of our presentation, and I will go straight into the presentation, the purpose of which, can I, Chairperson, if you allow, can I deactivate the video just for the sake of the bandwidth?
Okay. You can do that.
Thank you. Yes, as indicated, the purpose of our presentation today is to brief the Portfolio Committee on the Department's legislative processes, including legislation relating to the entities. And here in particular, we'll be looking at the Public Works Bill, the CIDB Act, AGRIMA South Africa, and IDT. This is in line with what the Portfolio Committee had requested from us. And we also have the Public Works General Law Amendment and Repeal Bill, which will also start this year. Perhaps I just need to indicate that in terms of the legislative program, the policies or the bills that are going to be looked into this year are the CIDB Act Amendment, the Public Works and Infrastructure Bill, the Public Works General Law Amendment and Repeal Bill, and obviously the Infrastructure Development Act, which is in the purview of Infrastructure South Africa, whilst we are dealing with the issue of the regulations of the IDA, or the Infrastructure Development Act. So next slide. Now, in terms of the legislative framework guiding government policy, it's important that we highlight that as the department, and obviously with all other departments nationally, provincially, and locally, Cabinet has approved a national development, a policy development framework, which all the spheres of government must comply with. The policies are developed in congruence, or that framework has been developed in congruence and compliance with the following: the Constitution, the intergovernmental relations, and all that. I'm not going to mention them. I understand the members would have gone through this, so I'll pass that slide. And the mandate of, let's go back to the mandate. Thank you. The Department of Public Works and Infrastructure derives its mandate from Schedule 4, Part A of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. The DPW mandate is reflected in the two existing white papers that Chairperson spoke about, which is the Towards the 21st Century of 1997, as well as another one, white paper, which is the Creating an Enabling Environment for Reconstruction, Growth, and Development in the Construction Industry of 1999. If you look at the two white papers, especially the first one was more focused on the property industry. The second one was more focused on the construction industry. And from 1997, 1999 up until now, there's a lot that has been achieved in terms of those two white papers. We have got the CIDB, we have got the CBE, that have been established in terms of those white papers. They are, you know, regulatory bodies of the department. And, you know, further than that, we also have your property sector charter council and the construction sector charter council, all flowing from the ideals of those two white papers. Secondly, we've got the GIAMA, the Government Immovable Asset Management Act 19 of 2007, as well as other various pieces of legislation. And here, we did not want to mention all of them here, save to indicate that you've got the CBE Act, for instance, you've got the AGRIMA Act, we have got the six professional built-in environment professional councils, your EXAS, your SACAP, and so forth and so forth. So all of those professional councils are regulated in terms of the legislative framework. We also have the Infrastructure Development Act of 2014, which was which has been, as amended. The EDA, as we all know, is now with the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure since the sixth administration in terms of the infrastructure coordination in the country. We have got the Land Affairs Board Act, which gives the minister that the powers and responsibilities in terms of development of the board that looks into the valuation of land parcels in the country. So those are some of the legislative frameworks that gives power, mandate, and function to the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. Next slide. Now, obviously, in each department, there's an expectation that there would be a concentration, if you like, or a branch, a unit that deals with the development or assisting the minister with the legislative responsibility of development of policy. In the department, we do have a branch. It's called Policy Research and Regulation. And the role really of this PRR branch is to promote the growth and transformation of the construction and property industries. It promotes a standardized approach and best practice in construction and property management in the public sector. And all these is done through research and development of policies, legislation, and best practices. It's very important because even the National Policy Development Framework does espouse that you need to have a unit that assists in terms of the policy research, in terms of synthesizing information, analyzing information, putting everything together as administration and submitting to the political head for authorizations and stuff. So we do have that policy branch. And it has got the two sub-programs, mainly the construction policy development program, as well as the property development program. And as I indicated, they regulate the construction sector. We also monitor the impact of the policies and legislation. Although I need to hasten that this is one element. This is one element in the branch that we're trying to bring about. It's not, we do not have the capacity currently. We are building that capacity so that for all the policies that have been developed by the department, there is monitoring of implementation of the policies. The same with the property policy development program. Let's go to the next slide. And in terms of the legislative process, as I have indicated, that our process is derived from the National Development Policy Framework, which was approved by Cabinet on the 2nd of December, 2020. And the process follows the main site legal stages, namely policy development, policy adoption, policy implementation, and policy evaluation. I've already alluded to the fact that when it comes to policy development, we know it is the purview of the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure. Obviously, he works together with the administration, and the branch is there to assist in terms of collating information and doing all that. And then once it is adopted by the minister, cabinet, and as well as assented to by the president, it is implemented. The part I was talking about, obviously, is the policy evaluation, monitoring and evaluation to ensure that the policy developed is actually making an impact in the country. Amongst the others, the DPW undertakes the following key processes, which sometimes cause unintended delays And I will unpack on that. The first one is the research to inform policy position. The policy directives are preceded by research, primary and secondary, best practice, benchmarking, initial consultations with key stakeholders, drafting of a discussion document, and consulting on the draft document prior to consulting with the larger stakeholders through gazetting for public comment. As you can see, that element alone is quite involved because it begs the question, even at the start of developing the policy, you need to ask particular questions around problem statement. Why do you need a policy to deal with a particular problem? If it's a societal problem, does it really require legislation? Those questions need to be asked. Before you even proceed, before you engage people, you need to have those questions asked. And that's why the policy branch is there to assist in terms of unpicking those questions and ensure that working together with presidency, we also get their SEAS, their socioeconomic impact assessment, the initial socioeconomic impact assessment, which also goes into detail, thorough detail of why you require the policy. Could any other framework not work, or any other instrument save the legislation not work? And then we have to answer all those questions. And if they are satisfied, they will give us the go ahead as presidency, monitoring and evaluation for us to initiate the process. And that's where we then get the role player stakeholders, we consult and so forth. The second element is the approval of policy position. And then obviously there we'll have to agree on the policy position that is consistent with constitution, the PFMA IGR framework, PSA, and informed by evidence-based research. Now, obviously here you have the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor who ensures that there's consistency with the Constitution of the Republic, as well as other legislation. There is no conflict at all. So those are some of the policy approvals that we require. The definitions, obviously we look at definitions if they are consistent with universally defined words, academic and developmental concepts, as well as legalistic definitions. These are onerous processes that sometimes delay the development of the draft bill. And you will see, as I unpack a little bit on the CIDB bill, why this can sometimes really pose a delay. The last element is the consultation of policies and draft legislation. We're starting with the cluster processes, introduction in parliament, public hearings. These all can take longer than planned. Even though the national policy development framework does give you some sense of how long each process must take, it does happen sometimes that we go over the times that are stipulated in terms of the requirement of the policy framework. Next slide. Now, I'm coming to the bigger one. All eyes are on this one. I note that, Chairperson. And you will notice that we only have one slide, and it's probably a worry for you as members of the portfolio committee. But I think you have already articulated that part, that we have done these presentations to the portfolio committee before. We have presented the basis of our wanting to develop the Public Works Act, which was obviously predicated on their two white papers as indicated. So we did not want to again rehash that story again. We felt that you already know the story and you are more interested in terms of the progress. Where are we? Are there any challenges in this regard? And therefore we felt that we can just put a one slide and then I can go into details or we will take questions relating to this one slide. But in terms of bullet number one, just to give a little brief there, yes, indeed. If you look at our APP for 2021-2022, there was an expectation that we will have the Public Works Bill, which is approved and gazetted. Unfortunately, that did not was not realized. That target was not realized, primarily because of the second rate product that we received from the legislative drafter. The process that we undertake in the department is that, working together with legal services unit, we go to the offices of the state attorney. They are the ones that will go and identify the counsel, appropriate counsel, through their own procurement processes. I don't know whether I think they've got a panel, and obviously through their own processes, they will identify the relevant legislative drafter in keeping with our scope of work and terms of reference. That information or that the person, the counsel, will then be communicated to the policy branch through the legal services. And then we will then brief them, and then they will start with the work. And this is exactly what happened in the previous financial year, that the legislative drafter was appointed. They were then given the task. Our first quarter target was for them to develop the memorandum of objects as well as the draft bill. But 2 months down the line, when the colleagues looked at what was developed at the time, it was really very weak documentation. This was then obviously engaged. The legislative drafter was engaged, and we thought that the work will improve, but unfortunately it was still second rate, to a point where it was advised that the legislative drafter be debriefed. Debriefed, we mean here, be removed and be replaced. The process, I'm on bullet number 3, the process to appoint the new drafter commenced obviously thereafter, culminating into the appointment of Advocate Uday Naidu in October 2021. And I think Advocate Naidu very much. He's also involved in the expropriation bill in the department. Advocate Naidu was then briefed by the department as well as the minister's office on the purpose of the project towards developing of the public works, the bill. Now, here, I think it's important to just illustrate a few points here. Initially, and in terms of what we had on our APP, the basis or the premise was on the 2 white papers. But as we engaged with the legislative drafter, we realized that, as I indicated before, there's a lot that came out of what was envisioned in terms of those 2 white papers have been attained by the department. I've pointed out to the CIDB, the CBE, and so forth. We then engaged, and after engagement with the legislative drafter and ministry, there was obviously a need to look at the current mandate of the department, which is infrastructure coordination, and a whole host of other things that came from the ministry to ensure that this is in keeping with the current developments in the country. And those were the things that we had to brief Advocate Naidu. Further engagements are still taking place taking place with the advocate that that the draft bill takes into consideration the current socio-economic environment and challenges, as I've articulated, of the 6th administration. They need to review other DPW policies to look at the EPWP and see which elements of the EPWP can be incorporated into the Act and a whole host of others as well. So the bill is also on the legislative program, and we are pushing, bending over backwards to ensure that this time around, in this financial year, at least we have something that can be presented or tabled at cabinet. The annexure with the latest development in terms of the draft public works and infrastructure has been provided to the committee. And here, I want to believe that the members of the portfolio committee would have gone through about 11 pages of the idea. It's actually the idea that we are putting to the committee to say, this is the trajectory of the department. Those are some of the elements that we are looking into covering into the bill. There will still be further engagements, but at least that's just an initiation process. And I believe that the document is with the committee, And if there are any questions, perhaps we'll also go into those in detail. Next slide. The CIDB Act and the amendment. The Act is the Act of 38 of 2000. This Act is being amended, Honorable Chairperson and members, to improve the transformation, sustainable growth, and participation of the emerging sector, performance of the performance improvement and work opportunities, the contractor and professional service provider development, client performance improvement, and non-compliance. Just maybe to unpack a little bit on those aspects, or perhaps let me just go to the next, the non-compliance as well. And we are looking at the proposed amendments will allow the CIDB to achieve its transformation objectives, as well as promote performance of public and private sector clients in the development of the construction industry. So really the purpose of this, this policy is really to look at those transformation things. But there's a number of things that I will articulate right now. To date, the CIDB amendment bill has been developed and is awaiting certification by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor prior to submitting to Cabinet towards gazetting for public comment. I must indicate that 2 days back, we have received a response from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. However, as I indicated, they are now punching holes, poking a number of holes on the bill, the draft bill that we have submitted to them. I have indicated that the purpose of this Office of the Chief State Law Advisor is to ensure that there's consistency with the Constitution and other legislation. But further than that, they also look at the drafting, how the bill is drafted. They look at the technical aspects, and they have done exactly that. In fact, I was worried because our target in the APP for this financial year is to have these gazetted for public comment. And I was a bit worried that this has been with the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor for quite some time, but they were indeed going through these almost word by word, clause by clause. And they've given us a lot to ponder, to discuss. We are busy already having meetings in that regard. We have engaged the CIDB, and we are engaging internally as well. And we are going to have a meeting with there's a task team that has been developed so that we look at what the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor is, what are their concerns. And then we will be dealing with those things. I've already requested from my branch, my team, that we develop an implementation plan that shows that even if we have to deal with these concerns or comments from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, we will still be on time in terms of ensuring that we gazette this. And that implementation plan will be shared with the members if it is required. If it is required by the members, we can share that, so that we can give assurance that that will still happen. I must also indicate that this has gone through the socioeconomic impact assessment. We have received a go-ahead, a certification in that regard. In fact, the presidency has requested that we even give what they call a monitoring and evaluation plan, which is now a requirement when you do the CS process. Now, we have had to go into that, and it also go into too much detail into really, really asking those very serious questions around the issues of risks, costs, and so forth, why we are undertaking this. And we have responded to all that, and it satisfied the MNE in presidency, and that's why they have then given a certification and authorization for us to go ahead. So all we were doing before we go on public comment was to get the opinion of the state law advisor. And unfortunately, they are asking a number of issues that we're trying to deal with. The minister will then introduce the bill to cabinet. That is really our hope for this financial year. As I indicated, it is also in the legislative program. Next slide. Next slide. Go back to Agreement South Africa. In terms of Agreement South Africa, members will perhaps know that Agrima South Africa is now a juristic person established in terms of the Agrima South Africa Act number 11 of 2015. Agrima South Africa was established by Ministerial Delegation of Authority in 1969. And since its inception, it has been administered by and was housed at the CSIR. But in 2015, the president assented to the promulgation of the act. And ever since then, Agrima South Africa has been operating as a legal person, and indeed they have, they're in full capacity. It's now a Schedule 3A public entity in terms of the PFMA. It receives the annual grant from the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. And this is one of the entities that are reporting on a quarterly basis to our deputy minister so that we are in compliance with the PFMA. Agrima South Africa, as we all know, is a technical assessment entity whose primary role is undertaking technical assessment and certification of non-standard construction projects, products in South Africa for which no national standard exists. And some of the very critical objects of the Agrima South Africa are providing assurance to specifiers and users of the fitness for purpose of non-standardized construction-related projects or systems. They are also supporting and promoting the process of integrated socio-economic development in the Republic as it relates to the construction industry, supporting and promoting the introduction and the use of certified non-standardized construction-related products and systems in the local and international market. Now, the department, we are monitoring the implementation of the Agrima South Africa 2015. And currently there is no need to amend the act, or that need has not yet been indicated to amend the act, because this is a fairly new act. However, there are issues now around regulations. They have not been brought formally to the department in terms of whether there are any difficulties in implementing the act itself and whether there is a need for regulations. And as I indicated, if that need comes to the department, it goes through a robust and rigorous process of checking if indeed we need those regulations, or it's just a question of coming up with different instruments without going through a protracted process of regulations. Next slide. Next slide. The IDT was established in 1990 as an independent temporary grant making agency. Can you go back? Can you go back? Leanne? Okay, yes. It was endowed with the 2 billion government grant with the primary purpose to enhance the standard of living conditions of disadvantaged communities through investing in socio-economic projects. It is regulated, and this is very important. The IDT currently in its form, in its current form, is regulated in terms of the deed of trust. Deed of trust are required in terms of the trust, trust property. It's actually Trust Property Control Act Act number 57 of 1988, which requires that every trust must have a trust instrument. And that instrument is instrument number 669 of 91. Now, a change in its mandate in 1997 saw the expansion in its service offering to the state at no cost. And that's also very important. They were given an endowment fund, and obviously it was on its way to be for depletion. But they continued to assist government at no cost and no adjustment to its funding. After the promulgation of the PFMA in 1999, IDT was then listed as a Schedule 2 major public entity with the expectation that it would be financially self-sustainable through the recovery of management fees on the delivery of social infrastructure to the state. Now, I think it is now, it is tried that IDT ever since then has been going through a number of challenges historically that were flowing from the issues of funding. They were no longer financially sustainable. There were governance issues, and all those things were discussed in the past and in a number of meetings where we made presentations to the portfolio committee and other committees to a point where there was even a decision that the IDT be dissolved. So bullet number four indicates that it was placed in a precarious position in that it assumes the dual institutional form, both at as a public entity in terms of the PFMA, as well as a trust in terms of the Trust Property Control Act and the deed of trust. This poses a huge challenge for the executive authority in terms of oversight, as certain provisions of the trust deed are in conflict with the provisions of the PFMA, and the powers of the executive authority to intervene in terms of legislative prescripts governing the public service are at times limited. And I would just cite an example of this conflict between the deed of trust and the PFMA. If you look at, I think it's clause 19 of the deed of trust of the IDT, it indicates or it prescribes how the trust should be dissolved if there is such a resolution by the board to dissolve it. So it articulates the steps, what must happen. And one of the critical things there is that it says that if that decision has been made, has been communicated to the executive authority, then the board must ensure that the assets of the trust are distributed to the educational institutions in South Africa. Now, come to think of it, the assets of IDT would be the building that they are currently occupying and the vehicles that they have and a number of other assets, movable assets and immovable assets. So imagine if you have to dissolve, then it means those things must be distributed. So those are some of the challenges. And beside that, you've got obligations, you've got assets, you've got projects that they're running. And those are the problems that we have picked up. If you look at the PFMA, it's very clear how you disestablish an entity. It prescribes a method of disestablishment of a public entity. So if you look at the two, they are in conflict. And that's the reason why we want to do away with the trust form of the IDT. So it is well known and properly recorded, as I've indicated, that the IDT experienced serious challenges historically until the executive authority in November 2020 tabled two options to cabinet to either allow it to be dissolved or reconfigured into a government component. Next slide. And cabinet indeed considered the presentation and resolved that they note the challenges faced by the IDT, and they approved that the proposed reconfiguration of the IDT be strengthened in line with the work done by the Presidential State-Owned Council on the rationalization of state-owned entities. And again, they also approved that the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure submit a comprehensive proposal on the IDT's reconfiguration to the Cabinet Committee for Economic Sectors, Investment, Employment, and Infrastructure Development in due course. And the minister obviously gave effect to this resolution by ensuring that the department requires the technical assistance from the GTEC, which is the Government Technical Advisory Center, to assist with the technical capacity in the development of a comprehensive proposal in the form of a business case, which will objectively and demonstrably recommend the best institutional form of the IDT, given its critical role in the country, that of social infrastructure facilitation and development. With a new board, the new board was then installed in July 2021, and the minister allowed the board, obviously, to be part of this reconfiguration journey. And she allowed them to look at what has been proposed, obviously, and the resolution of cabinet. And if there's anything that they would like to input into, obviously, because of their fiduciary responsibility and duties, they were allowed to then indicate as such. And indeed, in their own analysis, the board indicated its preference for the IDT to remain a Schedule II public entity and to dissolve the trust form. Now, this process will dovetail well with the GTEC process. Meanwhile, the board is focusing on driving the turnaround plan intended to address corporate governance challenges, as well as to institute measures to stabilize the organization and enhance performance to ensure financial sustainability and viability. So we are looking now at the board indicating that they would really prefer that it remains a Schedule II public entity. But obviously it means that it needs to satisfy a number of things, one of which is being financially sustainable, being viable, having portfolios from the client departments, user departments, and being able to really deliver on those projects, building capacity, build environment capacity, and all other capacities so that they are able to do this. We do not want what happened in the past, where you find that there are properties that are being constructed and there are challenges with those properties. So they have to demonstrate all those things. And that's exactly what they are doing by building that turnaround plan. It will only be known when the business case process is completed and with cabinet approval, whether an enabling legislation will be required for whichever institutional form recommended. Here we are indicating that there is no act for IDT. IDT is a trust. It operates using the trust deed. However, if this process we are undertaking of a business case, looking at different options, looking at their viability, if we come to a decision that IDT will be indeed a Schedule II public entity, there would also probably be a recommendation that it must have a founding document, just like the CIDB, CBE, Agrima South Africa. So when that time comes after this recommendation and approval by cabinet, we will then embark on that process. Next slide. Oh, I think I'm done, Chairperson. This is the last slide. We therefore recommend that the Portfolio Committee note the report on the department's legislative processes, including the legislation regulating the entities. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Mohasa. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, DG. I indicated that I'm using another device that I'm not used to. I now invite honorable members to comment on this presentation. I'm looking here. I don't see any hand yet. Are there any hands raised?
Chair, sorry, are we not getting a presentation on the memo that was sent through from the law advisor?
Do you have two memos, Mr. Mwasa?
Chairperson, yes, there was a memo that was articulating, as I indicated, the initiation process that we are undertaking with Advocate Naidu. So we had requested him to give us something before we even get into the public works, the draft public works bill. We wanted to just see if he understand the brief and it is well articulated in that memo. So he has provided us with that memo and the minister has requested that be shared with yourself. so that if there are any questions or any additions, any enhancements from the portfolio committee, that will actually help us as we re-engage or we continue engagements with him to actually ensure that we have a bill that is also supported by your own inputs. So I'll be guided by you, Honorable Chairperson. It's a memo of about 11 pages. We did not reduce that to a presentation. If I have to go through it, I can do that, but I'll be guided by you, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, I don't know what happened to my own documents because I don't have the memo. I only have this one, the one that you just presented, but maybe okay, you can add by presenting it. Though, is it necessary, honorable members, that we deal with the memo? I don't think so. But
it came through very late last night, I think, Chair. The one that I saw came through very late last night.
May I come
the in? The memo, not the presentation. Yes, DM.
Just to alert the honorable members that the memo in itself, it was more to show the honorable members that there is this work that we have started. But we still, even amongst ourselves, are engaging with it. There comes a time where we then table it. Now it was just presented as proof of work in progress. I think it would be too premature to engage in it in detail. Okay. And therefore presenting it may, especially this being a public platform, may create problems in that by the time we then come with something concrete, and it doesn't talk to what the honorable members would have commented to now. It may seem a bit challenging. Mine was more to say, this is how far we've come with the work, but we are still internally engaging, and the processes that have been outlined in the presentation are going to follow so that the honorable members have the comfort to see that we are working on the draft bill. I thought I needed to just clarify that, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, TM. Thank you. You are assisting us, honorable members. Let's interact with the presentation that has been given to us, taking the memo as for information because they are not yet there. I will comment maybe after you. Honorable members, I have a challenge. I indicated, okay, I can see the hand now of, it's Honorable Shabalala. Honorable Graham Mare, in terms of the hands that I can see only those two hands. Oh, Honorable Hicklin, also. Then over to you, Honorable Members, Honorable Shabalala, Honorable Graham Mare, Honorable Hicklin. Those are the three hands that I can see on my side.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the DM, honorable members, and the officials. And I wish to appreciate the briefing. I will not want to get into the administrative processes because those are not for us. In fact, it's very progressive when we see the bill itself, because we are policymakers. Safe to say that, Chairperson, I am I think here we will be prepared to navigate against some difficulties when it comes to the acquired or outsourced legal aspects, because right now we have been told that there was one that tried for the first time, second time, and the product was not what the department was talking to. But I am not sure with the one that says when there was a document that was sent to the state law advisor and it was punched, holes were punched into it. And my question would be that who initially had appointed that service provider? And for me, maybe it's structural a challenge that you have someone that is not employed by the department who does not, I'm not sure around accounting and reporting, if because I would imagine a situation where the institution that has appointed this person would be also be involved in monitoring from the word A to Z, so that at least in the middle of the document being formulated, the same a procurer will be aware of the shortcomings. But I know that the department in that sense will find itself in a very challenging situation. But I would suggest that, Chairperson, can we have a programmatic a schedule of the time frames, whatever that needs to come, or whatever stages that is gonna be reached at what point, can we have that so that we are not told that this delayed, but for us, we are not sure delayed for what date was it, for what time frame was it? I'm not sure about what I heard about Agrima SA, but maybe some of the members will also raise some questions around that. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Honorable Graham Mara.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think today's presentation was interesting, but I think it was devoid of a lot of information. I feel kind of a bit robbed, I must be honest, because I don't think we've been given any new information today with respect to progress on anything. Also, our agenda, as far as I recall, spoke to the CBE Act as well, which hasn't been covered at all in any way, shape or form in this presentation. So at some stage, I hope we will be getting a briefing on the updating of that act. One of my big concerns is the socioeconomic impact analysis. I think that if I look at the one that was done in preparation for the drafting of the expropriation bill, it was woefully inadequate. So I would like to find out who is responsible for the actual study, and also what the terms and conditions are of that study. And who eventually presents that, because I know it gets signed off by the president at cabinet level, but we need to know that those socioeconomic impact studies are not just cut and paste studies like the last one was for the expropriation bill. Even the parliamentary legal advisor raised the that socioeconomic impact assessment. So, you know, if you're going to do one, it has to deal with economy and not just, you know, sort of people's opinions on how things are going to happen. So I hope that that's going to be properly done in light of the importance of the CIDB bill as well as I think it was on the CIDB bill. Sorry, I just want to check quickly. Yeah, it's on the CIDB bill. I mean, the CIDB bill is absolutely imperative. I mean, CIDB is responsible for, it's the main vehicle for transformation within the construction sector. And if we're not looking at the impact that this bill is going to have, and we're not formulating policy and legislation around what we're trying to achieve, then there's no point in even undertaking that. So I think we need to listen to what the Office of the Chief Law State Advisor has to say, because I do believe that they have an important input to make. My greatest concern here is, having read through the memo from Advocate Naidu, it appears to me that there seems to be some sort of resistance or hesitancy in drafting this public works bill. There seems to be resistance to giving the department this empowering provision that will give it force and effect in the industry. The sort of my interpretation of what I read last night was that they're saying, well, you know, the minister can set up this committee and it's with all the phases, the spheres of government, and everybody can, you know, have like a chat and it can be a nice big committee and whatever. But a committee cannot replace legislation. Legislation gives the minister and the people in that committee the power to do what is required. So I feel that there seems to be some sort of reticence in moving forward on this bill. I think it is absolutely imperative that public works be empowered to go forward, because we need to be addressing issues around compliance. We need to be addressing issues around enforcement mechanisms, and that cannot be done without enabling legislation. So I think I just feel like everybody's dragging their feet on this. We've been speaking about this from 2019. We are on Sunday. It was 3 years since we were sworn into Parliament, and we've made zero progression on the public works bill that we've been talking about since we started. So I'm very, very concerned that there seems to be this sort of hesitancy and reticence. So I'd like to know whether or not we can just request that there's more impetus given to this going forward. Thank you very much.
Honourable Hicklin.
Thank you so much, Chair. Yes, I had the same concerns as Honourable Graham Marie, because we were going to also be discussing the CBE Act, and that wasn't in it either. And much like Honourable Graham Marie, I noted the comment on the fact that the role of the Policy Research and Regulation Branch, and I go back to one of the statements that I made in our discussions on the CBE, and again in my budget speech that I made yesterday, when I spoke about Program 5's public protection policy and legislation that had a massive approved budget that was spent, and yet there were no financial, there was no compliance reports that had been done between 2018 and 2021 that I found quite concerning, because there were no compliance reports that had been done in a three-year period regarding legislation and policies. And this raises red flags to me, because this talks directly to exactly what we're talking about now, that there are no policies that have been developed. And this is exactly what we're talking about. There are no programs. There has been no development. And it really is a worry for me, because this is exactly what we are fighting, and this is exactly what we need to do in order to work towards transforming the areas within the DPWI. I am really concerned that we are big on words and scant on delivery and scant on attention to detail. I am no wiser than I was before I got this presentation on how much further we are towards getting a public works bill. And as my colleague said, we really are 3 years down the line and we are no further towards any solutions. So there is much that has to be done, and I look forward to progress. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Samantha, sorry, Honorable Graham Murray.
Sincere. You can call me Honorable Samantha. Before I got married, my surname was Yankovic Bershon, and there was nobody who could ever say my surname, so I was always Counselor Samantha. So I don't mind being called Honorable Samantha as well. Chairperson, thank you for giving me another opportunity. I just wanted to ask, with respect to the socioeconomic impact assessments or studies, the one with the expropriation bill had to be pired before it was released. And I think that that's unacceptable. And I would like to request that that SEIAS report gets provided at the same time to us as any draft legislation, so that we can determine that that has been done and it has been and it has fulfilled the requirements of one of those assessments. So please could we request that that forms part of the documentation that we are provided as the portfolio committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members. DM and your team, I read the slides that you have sent to us. In fact, I only got the memo just now, as I'm sitting here. I read the slides. I read them again because there was something that I was looking for and I couldn't find it. It's really so disappointing. I don't want to lie to you. It's really so disappointing because several times in our meetings, when we have asked why is this not done, you said that there is no act that guides you to enforce these rules. And that is why we have always been saying as this portfolio committee, please ensure that this bill, it comes in. Because it's one thing when we are doing our own oversight, you would refer. We can't demand money from client departments because there is no act that enforces this. There is no act. And then we found out there are these two white papers. And we rejected when you were saying to us, there is a third white paper, you will never move forward. I'm really, really disappointed because the reality is that there is nothing that you are bringing again. That's why I read that document so many times. I was looking at something that, because at least last time you had timelines, you just even don't even have timelines now. I'm disappointed, TM, seriously. I don't know whether it is. I have not read this note from Advocate Nigel. I don't know whether there is no, you don't have an appetite to do this, or you like the status quo, which when we are asking questions, you always refer to the lack of this act. I am really, really disappointed. Even on the CIBD Act, I am also frustrated because when we came in, we find out the issue of transformation, it lies in that act. That was raised several times by those that are in the Built Environment Council. And we said that this must be fast-tracked, and today we are told they are still on the pipeline. In fact, to me, there's nothing that you presented today. To me, there is really nothing that you presented today. If maybe I had read the notes from Advocate Daidu, maybe I would say, okay, there is something that is being done. I have not read them. Remember, DM and DG and you, that this department is crucial. We were saying that yesterday. Because it's a department that works with provincial departments, that works with municipalities. And the worst part is that it also is part of the spatial development. So how then, if you don't have an act going to ensure that a clear coordination, a clear integration is done when you work with other spheres of government. I don't have any questions. It's just a comment that I'm disappointed. I am not happy because all this information that you're telling, and what is worse is that we postponed a meeting that was supposed to sit on the 31st of March this year because of the Expropriation Act. You were supposed to come and brief us on the 31st of March. And now it's as if we have taken you off guard when we were expecting this report on the 31st of March. I am not happy, DM. I don't want to lie. I am not happy. And I hope that the minister gets that clearly, that we are not happy. In fact, you have heard the comments. We are not happy. This act is very crucial for this department to work optimally. This work is very crucial for this department to exert its power to its client departments that it is working with. This act is also very crucial for the coordination of this department when it works with the provinces and the municipality. I am not happy. If there are any questions that have been raised by honorable members, DM and your team, you may then respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will let me appreciate the comments from and questions from the honorable members, and indicate that we take note of the level of unhappiness that the honorable members are sharing with us. And I would want to say, as the ministry, we probably are in the same boat with the honorable members. But the good thing is that at times, what we fight about in the department, when it is expressed in meetings of this nature, it does help us in driving the programs and ensuring that administration also looks at these matters as not just matters to be done. But I must indicate that we never really put our foot off the pedal on the public works bill. It would be that at times things that you would have wanted to do yesterday, the processes involved make the kind of progress you would want to register at times to be a bit not realizable. But we do want to indicate that this, especially the public works bill, is what frustrates us. You are correct in saying so, Honorable Chairperson. We are the ones who said it upfront that it does limit the ability of the department to do what it is expected of at times. But I would want to first, on the other issues that the honorable members have raised, I would want to give to the DG and the acting DDG, to the acting DG, Dade Mwemi, and the acting DDG, Dade Mwasa, to kind of respond, and I will round off. But I do want to share the honorable members' concerns. Over to you, acting DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister, and thanks to the chair and the honorable members for their questions as well as their comments and assertions that have been made in as far as this. I think DM and chair, at the outset, we are the first ones to acknowledge and to admit that the bill has been inordinately delayed. And we had over the last 2 months sought to bring the matter to finality and to have a bill that is ready to be tabled ultimately before Parliament. And I think that there has been a concerted effort, not just on the part of the administration and the department ourselves in engaging with the appointed counselor. When it became clear that the delay was on the appointment of a counsel to assist with the drafting process and in getting it done, work immediately began to narrow those challenges and to resolve them with the state law advisors and the state attorney's office. And once we were able to go through that line, the arduous task of having to draft began. And I must say that the ministry had championed this cause, with the minister availing herself as and when it was opportune and to ensure that the council is briefed adequately and that the council is able to go through this. And we only began realizing significant progress once the memorandum of the bill was actually almost the emergence of consensus around that. So while we acknowledge that indeed it has inordinately delayed and that there is a need to fast track this, we are also aware of the fact that we have over the last few weeks made significant progress on this, and that we will want to maintain that momentum, Chair. We note with regret the disappointment and the that members are perturbed by the idea that we have taken this long and it doesn't appear that there is an end in sight, and that it appears we're kicking the can down the road. But we are also not oblivious to the availability of time on the part of the drafter, as well as the work that is being done and the consultations intra-department that have got to happen. And also the requisite, because this bill, as you are aware, will have far-reaching clauses that would also have impact on provinces. And the consultative process is quite protracted. And one must acknowledge the complexity of the bill of this nature and what it seeks to do. And in resolving serious structural challenges that have beset the sector for quite a significant period of time, and also the impact this would have in future on the powers and the ability of the department to function quite cohesively. It is for those reasons, really, and without necessarily negating at all and in full appreciation of the comments of the chair representing the views of the committee and the express of utter disappointment in this regard, that we can only, Chair, but recommit ourselves and with the newfound spirit to fast track the implementation of the bill, that perhaps we need to make a commitment to the committee that on behalf of the minister and deputy minister, that within a week we should be able to provide the committee with a timetable on when we would complete which step we have to undertake, as my colleague, Mr. Mahasa, outlined at the end, the steps and processes we still have got to go through. And I think that what we should do to give the committee the necessary comfort and the ability to track and to play effective oversight is to attach key deliverable dates on each and every one of the requisite steps in the process of this bill towards bringing it ultimately to due consideration. Even more importantly, some of the shortcomings that the members of the committee points out to, are what we should actually take to heart and what we should actually consider in our process as where we are, that even before we formally table the bill before the committee, that those matters are factored in and that they are duly considered, and that by the time we do come, we have the benefit, obviously, in advance of the thorough inputs that have been made by members and in comments, and to also incorporate some of the concerns that have been raised in previous meetings as it relates to the weaknesses that may have been identified systematically that the bill should address and should seek to put to the fore. So with that, I can then request my colleague Mulatelo to answer some of the questions that have been posed by members. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Acting DG, and thanks, Honorable Chairperson and members and DM for the comments. I note that there's not a lot of questions, honestly. There are not a lot of comments, save to or save for the disappointment indeed that has been expressed by the chairperson. And I don't want to repeat what the acting DG has already indicated. He has guided in terms of what will flow from here. And he has also articulated some of the challenges that we are having. And you would recall that in my I think the first or second slides, when I was talking about the policy processes, I did indicate that at times delays are on those elements when you do consultations and so forth. But honestly speaking, you are correct, Honorable Chairperson. This has been very long. And indeed, we will ensure that we provide that. Maybe just going to the questions, specific questions. There was a question from Honorable Shabalala. I do need to indicate that I've got colleagues that are accompanying me from policy, and as well as we also have colleagues from legal services. So if there are any technical responses that they can provide through you, Chair, maybe they can also do that. On the first issue of Honorable Chabalala, I think you were quite correct in terms of sometimes the processes of appointment of legislative drafter are a bit intricate, in the sense that I made this observation. I need to say this, that unlike when you go out and you procure a legal drafter, we follow a process of engaging the state attorney, and they undertake the process, and then they would then appoint a legal drafter. We then sit with the legal drafter, and then we tell them our terms of reference and the scope of work that they must undertake. And we then obviously meet with them on a periodical basis to check that the quality of work that they are producing is what is required in terms of our deliverable. And it is very clear that my colleagues, as they were engaging during those periods, last financial year, the first quarter of last financial year and the second quarter, they became very worried with the quality of work. And hence there was a decision, because what you then realize is that if you indicated in this financial year that we will be able to provide this bill, and then there's a problem in your first quarter, it has that ripple effect. Whatever that you said you'll achieve in the first quarter, it has to go to the second quarter. If you don't achieve it in the second quarter, it's that ripple effect until the end of the financial year. And this is exactly what I've come to realize when I joined policy, that this was the case. However, there are processes. I think legal services will be in a better position to articulate on issues of the appointment of service, legal legislative drafters, and how do we deal with instances like this, except where, the normal process of engaging any service provider and looking at the project, because you have a project manager that must ensure that the work is carried out in line with the terms of reference and the scope of work. There was another question from Honorable Graham regarding no articulation of the CBE. I was trying to look at the subject and the requirement. I did not pick up anything on the CBE. However, on the CBE, as I indicated on the legislative framework, that we don't even have the CBE there. There is still an internal discussion around the CBE Act and the Professional Councils Act, because I think you would understand that the CBE is the mother body of the six professional councils, built environment professional councils. So there is a need to look at amendment of the CBE Act and all the six built environment councils. Now, in that regard, there are still engagements because there were proposals that were put forward. We are engaging on them. One of them was to have CBE maybe as a super council, something similar to your health profession. But there are discussions internally with the minister in terms of that. So we regret that we could not give much detail on the CBE. Perhaps because it was not articulated on the subject, we understood that perhaps it's not so much of a requirement for now. We'll definitely give some aspects about it next time. On the issue of the SEERs, you are correct, Honorable Graham. I actually, maybe my colleagues that are dealing with these technical issues can respond on why the SEERs was paired, as you indicated. Because for me, this is a document where presidency says, I'm happy with the content. You have been able to articulate and respond to particular questions around policy development. You have been able to articulate on the risks, on the costs, on the benefits, and the lines that you're going to serve, the social issues of the country, and the people that this act will impact, the impact of the policy itself, and those were articulated. And I thought that a document such as that should not be embargoed, especially to the members of the portfolio committee. So we will look into that, and surely we can avail, from where I'm sitting, it should be availed, the SEERs for the CIDB. But in terms of who is responsible for producing or developing the SEERs, it is the policy practitioners. Because as I indicated, that we do research, we analyze information, we synthesize the information after consultation with the internal and external stakeholders, and then we put together a document. And in this case, just to give an example, if you look at the CIDB are the regulators of the construction industry. So this would be the very first people that are affected by that act. Well, surely I'm not dismissing the fact that the others, the public and contractors and so forth, are also affected by the act. But you do get those inputs. And in a forum, it's called National Stakeholder Forum of the CIDB, you would get all those inputs from different forums or fora, like your built environment, who are participating in the National Stakeholder Forum, contractors, emerging contractors. You'll also hear issues coming from the CIDB, departments that are supposed to roll out infrastructure and construction projects. And then we take all those things together. They are being synthesized, and then we put together a document, which is then sent to the presidency. Then they ask those particular questions. If you have picked up that the development of this CS is very weak, perhaps we could share that with yourselves, and I don't know if there would be any input from the portfolio committee before we even submit to the portfolio committee. But in terms of process, those are done by the department. The last one from myself was the resistance. I think Honorable Graham indicated that there seems to be resistance. From where I'm sitting, honestly, it's not really resistance. There is no resistance. I think the message has been knocked in our heads so many times. And as I indicated, that we are bending over backwards to ensure that this time around, we ensure that the appointed council is able to give us something that articulates what we require in the Public Works Bill. I do need to indicate, as you would read that memo, that one of the responsibilities of the legislative drafters is obviously they compare with other countries, they look at other case law, they look at legislation and so forth. And they would come back and say, but just to give an example, if you are talking about conferring powers to the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure, and that power is already with the provincial, let's say the MEC of Public Works, you cannot take the power from the MEC of Public Works if such power has been conferred in terms of the Constitution of South Africa. And therefore, we need to look at how we deal with those aspects. That's why there is some aspect in the memo where he talks about the intergovernmental forums. And these are forums that are currently taking place where the minister is the chairperson of the MINMEC. And MINMEC, in the MINMEC, you have the minister, which is national. You also have the provincial MECs, but we also have a person representing local government, which is from SALGA and COGTA, participating in those. But there, obviously, there is a need to expand it so that you can even have municipalities, MMs may be represented in this. So those are some of the things that we are looking into, so that we are not accused of usurping the powers that are conferred in terms of the constitution to a local sphere or a provincial sphere. Those are some of the questions that are coming as we engage the council, and it makes it a bit difficult. And the second one, maybe just to give an example, is the EPWP. If you look at the EPWP, there will always be a question, do you really need an act for EPWP? Or is the policy sufficient enough? Because there are certain things that can be driven through policy. They don't need legislation. And then we need to really, you know, articulate and provide more information to the council. So he is really, you know, putting us to serious test, because as he indicated in the last engagement we had with him, he said that I don't want to do the bill for the sake of just doing the bill. It must really make sense, and it must answer those pertinent questions. And I think, Chairperson, you have indicated that those things have been raised, and we are really engaging on that one. The last one is the timeline. Okay, I think the DJ has dealt with the timelines. I think I've covered the CIDB. Yeah, on the CIDB, this would be my last comment on the CIDB. As I indicated, this was a requirement in the previous financial year, and there were some challenges there. That's why in this first quarter, as I indicated, it's one of the targets in our APP to have the CIDB gazetted, and we are, doing everything we can to ensure that that does happen. Now, engagement with the Chief State Law Advisor, as I indicated, that he's indicating a number of things. They are not necessarily that major to a point where we'll need to change or amend substantive amendments that require us to actually go and substantially amend the CIDB Act. It's just, certain things around the drafting and then the definitions, changing of those things. And why do we have, for instance, in fact, there's no rationale for the board. There's one of the things that we have put there in the amendment is actually to regulate the appointment of board, because in the existing act, it's not very clear in terms of the appointment of the board, as well as the appointment of the CEO, the process to appoint the CEO, the endorsement by the minister and cabinet. We have also included those as some of the things in the act. So he's asking those questions. For instance, why would you want the CEO to be appointed by the minister, or even go to the extent of going to cabinet, when this is a responsibility of the board? They have a fiduciary duty to ensure that there's a CEO, they are also regulated in terms of the King's Four, you know, those particular issues. So we are trying to respond to that. On Monday, we will unpack those few issues from the state law advisor, but I'm quite certain that we will meet our target for this quarter. But it is really regrettable, Chairperson, and we will really do all we can in terms of the Public Works Bill. We are working very closely with Advocate Naidu, and as you know him, he's very particular. So we hope that we will deliver this before the end of this financial year. Thank you. Thank you, DG.
I think, Honorable Chairperson, I think that, Honorable Chairperson, we've tried to respond to both the comments as well as the questions to the best of our abilities. And once more, let us indicate that the Public Works Bill in particular. I remember quite well that we started raising the issue of the need for this act when we were also dealing with the expropriation. And the expropriation now is at its tail end, and we're still battling with the drafting of the Public Works Bill. That's the extent of the delay. But as I have indicated, this is both our concern and as the ministry and now I think the message has also gone through both the drafter as well as the senior administrators. We will work tirelessly to ensure that we register much progress and we will ensure that we do provide the committee with the timelines or a program that reflects milestones as well as timelines. But I do want to say, Chair, in as much as we accept that fact that we've delayed on this one, on the other ones, they truly running their course in terms of the CIDB amendments. They will come to the committee at the appropriate time, but we will also try and ensure that we implore on the state law advisors to finalize the process. Those would have been my comments. Back to you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, DM. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Mr. Muhasa, for the response. I think one thing that we will do as the portfolio committee is to hope. There's nothing that we can do. We will hope that before the end of this term, we will have Public Works Bill. Thank you. Ms. Martinez, if you're still around, can we then? Can you please flight to the issue of the minutes?
Sorry, Chair.
Yes.
I apologize for interrupting. I don't know if you saw my question in the chat box.
I thought Mr. Muwasa read the chat box and responded.
Okay. I just wanted to get clarity. So if we can just get that in writing, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Can we then get the minutes? Ms. Martinez, is she in? I know that she said that she will have to go and do that.
Yes, I'm in, Chair. I'm just trying to open the folder of minutes now because I've just got everything open in front of me. Please bear with me, Chairperson.
Okay.
All right, Chair, we start with the minutes of the meeting that was held on the 3rd of May, where the department was briefing the committee about its APPs and that of the PMTE. Okay, that's the attendance register. We had quite a contingent as well from the department, Chair. Chairperson, I'd like to zoom into any resolutions if there were. No, there were no resolutions for that meeting. So it was basically the department's presentation on its APPs in preparation with the budget votes. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Nola. Honorable members, any corrections on these minutes? I think we did receive them in time. Or any mover that we adopt them as their true reflection of what happened on the 3rd of May? If someone can just speak, I have.
Can I move, Chair? It's yes, Shabalala.
Yes. Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. Can I get a seconder?
Chair, I second.
Thank you, Honorable Van Schalkwyk. The second set of minutes. Yes. The second set of minutes, Ms. Martinez.
Thank you, Chair. The second set of minutes is the minutes of the meeting that was held on the 4th of May, where the portfolio committee received a briefing from the department and entities on their strat and annual plans. So the third, the fourth, and I think the eighth were basically dealing with the APPs, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martinez. Can we then get a mover for these minutes or corrections if there are any corrections, honorable members? I have a challenge of seeing hands, if someone can just speak.
Shabalala here, can I move, Chair?
Thank you, honorable Shabalala. Moving for that we adopt the minutes. Can I get a seconder, please?
I'll second, Chair.
Thank you, honorable Hicklin. 6th of May. The report.
Yes, Chair, it was the adoption of the budget vote report. And the committee also adopted a couple of sets of minutes during that same meeting. Thanks, Chair.
Can
I propose adoption, Chair?
Thank you, Honorable Graham Murray.
I'm second, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Van Schalkwyk. Any other asset, Ms. Martinez?
Yes, Chair, it's the minutes of the 11th. I'm trying to beam them up now. Yes, the minutes of the 11th of May, where the Parliamentary Legal Advisor and State Law Advisor were meant to brief the committee on the A list of the expropriation bill. But it turned out that because the members didn't receive the presentation on time, so that meeting had to be cancelled. So the committee took a resolution to postpone the meeting to a later date so that members could fully engage with the document. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Martinez. Honorable Van Schalkwyk. Thank you, Honorable Van Schalkwyk. Can we get a second, please?
Yeah, I
second. Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. We then have a seconder. I think that was the last set. Ms. Martinez?
We've got one more, Chair, 18th of May, where the Portfolio Committee received a briefing from the department on governance issues pertaining to the entity's board.
Okay. Can you then see them?
And that should be all, Chair.
I think we resolved that we will have another meeting maybe in the next quarter, the one that is starting in July, in which we will be dealing with CPE. I think I did when I was rounding off. We resolved that. And I will share the report as sent to me by the minister with all the members. I was by mail from Honorable Hicklin, but as you know, Honorable Hicklin, we're all busy preparing for the debate here of yesterday. You will definitely get the report on the DC, but we will schedule definitely with CPE in the next quarter. Can we then get a mover for those for that report, Honorable Members?
Sorry, Chair, I didn't hear what you said. The signal cut out when you said something about you will share the report. Which report are you referring to?
With all the members, remember the report that you requested?
I requested the SACAP report.
Yes, I'm saying I will share. I was busy preparing for the budget vote, so I could concentrate on that one. You will get it before the end of this week. All the members.
Thank you very much, yeah. Chair.
Can we then get a mover for the minutes, Honourable Members? Even my network is.
Chairperson, I'm happy to propose.
And I'm happy to second.
Thank you, Honourable Graham Murray, and seconder, Honourable Hicklin. Any announcements, Ms. Martinise?
Nothing from my side, Chair, except for the fact that we're having another meeting next week on Wednesday at the same time.
Thank you. Our meetings on Wednesday, they start at 9 or 10. 9. Okay, thank you. Honorable members, let me again, I don't know whether the DM is still in the meeting. Let me again appreciate the way you debate and engage in all the issues that we are discussing as this portfolio committee. Also appreciate the way that we dealt with our budget vote yesterday as this portfolio committee, all represented by females. Of course, it was really good and inspiring, no heckling, no what really this portfolio committee is so good and it supports each other. But DM, I hope you have noted the strong words that we have shared with you in connection with the bill. We want to play our oversight. We also doing that to assist even the department, so that it can also play its role. It's not that we pity, but also the department can play its role, as you have indicated in many a times. Thank you, Honorable Members, hoping that you enjoy your Africa Day. As we close, I want to read from the AU. Just one paragraph, Honorable Members, until, from the AU anthem. If I will share with you just one paragraph, let us all unite and sing together to uphold the bonds that frame our destiny
let us dedicate ourselves to fight together for lasting peace and justice on earth. It's on our AU anthem. It is very crucial and it is important that whatever that we do, we fight together for the lasting peace and justice on earth. I am saying this, honorable members, because today we all know that in Mthatha, there is a march in which all political parties, all leaders of society, all civic organizations are demanding justice for Namhla Matwa, who is alleged to have been killed by her boyfriend, who had abused her several times during the time that she was alive. So it is crucial that we unite when we fight for a lasting peace on earth. Thank you, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.
Long live the chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Recording stopped.